What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast that still can't resist volleying stray conkers at this time of year. Coming up, outlandish championship predictions, Bruce out at Bloomfield Road, Bloomfield out at Kenilworth Road, and League One and League Two take centre stage. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we are back slightly later than usual with a bit of a mixed up show for you this week as well. Hope you enjoy it, listener. Before I introduce my two partners, let me tell you about the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. And if you look in the show notes of this page, you will find the boosted Acca from our partners Quinbet for this weekend's EFL action. Adrian and Sam have picked it. They've gone for Stockport to beat Blackpool, Gillingham to beat Cheltenham, and over 2.5 goals in Chesterfield against Salford. And you can get that at 4-1 with Quinbet. Either search on their website, or as I say, just click the link in the show notes. We'll also put it out on our X page as well. All right, well, I've mentioned them there. Sam Parker and Adrian Clark with me. Sam, fresh-ish from Harrogate. I imagine that's quite a nice little trip, isn't it? Beautiful town. The Grub's got a good reputation at the ground. Did you enjoy yourself?
Quickly becoming one of my favourite trips, I would say. Lovely place. Little bit of food before the game. Little run around the parkland the morning after. A quaint little ground surrounded by trees. That something lovely about that. And I've probably bored on about Hampton and Richmond on occasion on this podcast. Very similar ilk. Nice trees over each stands. That's just something about it. Perfect pitch, autumnal evening, bit of dew on the pitch, relatively warm. Yeah, it's a lovely spot to take in a game of association football, to coin one of your phrases, Matt.
Evocative. I like it. You can't beat an old school stadium, right, Clarkie? Especially one that's not been done up. You know, we've all got our favourites in the EFL. Grimsby gets a lot of love, doesn't it? Any others that you can think of off the top of your head where you think, oh, I'm going there this weekend. I love it there.
Oh, that's a good shout. Well, my local ground is from where I'm from, is Cambridge United. So, and that really doesn't look any different to how it did back when I was a kid. So yeah, I like going there every now and again. But yeah, I was just thinking, when you're saying you can't beat an old school ground, I mean, you can, can't you? Some of them are a bit rubbish, aren't they?
You can if it's not your ground that you go to every week, I think, is the thing, isn't it?
Like, I mean, Luton's not the best, is it? Harrogate's good. I've been outside it, but I haven't been in it, which means I can't count that I've been there. And I'm closing in on the 92. I'm around 80. So I'm going to have to make a little pilgrimage myself, I think, sometime soon.
All right. If anybody from TalkSport in the production department is listening, get Clarkie on a Harrogate game ASAP, please. All right. No championship action this weekend, but we thought what we'd do is make some wild assumptions on what might happen over the rest of the season in Tier 2. So I've categorised this. We're going in blind because we thought it might spark a ribald debate. I've got several categories. First one, pretty straightforward. Who's going to finish top? Adrian, who are you going for?
I'm going to go for Ipswich. I think that they will get it right. They're only 6 points off at the moment, aren't they? And they haven't got started. Let's be honest. I love Coventry, and I think that they've got a really good chance of finishing top this season. But the depth isn't there. And during this long, hard winter up until the January window, they're bound to lose a few players, key players, and that might hinder them. I tell you what, if Cover first or second come January, the board will be idiots, wouldn't they? Not to invest and give Frank Lampard loads of money, in which case they would have a chance. But no, Ipswich for me, good friend of mine, Mark O'Hare, who I work with on a different podcast, he's a sort of odds expert, and he's got spreadsheets galore. I don't know how he does it, but he's got his own sort of system, and by his reckoning Coventry away clear at the moment in terms of expected points, and Ipswich are second, so they really, in his head and according to the data, they should effectively be second at this moment in time. And I think over the next few weeks, Ipswich will get there. Philogene is obviously flying, but others are starting to come to the party. So yeah, providing they get that away form going, I fully expect Ipswich to get into the top two and maybe go and win the title. I just think they've got a deeper squad than most of the teams in the division.
Sam, my intro to this bit was going to be, isn't it refreshing that we're not just going to pick one of the teams that were relegated from the Premier League last season? Adrian's kiboshed that with his very first answer. Are you going to make it even worse?
I promise the listeners I'm going to disagree with Clarkey in the next half an hour. I can't do it here. He's basically just read out anything that I scribbled down in the last 24 hours.
Really?
Yeah, I just think that the depth of Ipswich is starting to come to the fore, and it would have taken a little bit of time, and this will be a reoccurring theme on today's podcast, I'm sure, but you have to give new players an opportunity to bed in. You had to give Kieran McKenna the opportunity to set and to reset and look what was going to be his winning formula moving forward. And with the likes of Nunez and Jack Clark, I think Jacob Greaves as well, kind of waiting in the wings the other day against Norwich, just accentuates that strength that they've got. And, you know, the first win in the derby or whatever at Portman Road for, was it 16 years? I wouldn't say at a canter, but, you know, they controlled that game and never looked in any doubt, really, once they got back in front. You are seeing the remnants maybe of kind of a Buendia season at the moment from Philogene. Kind of, he's probably your best player in the division, isn't he? Maybe along with a few of the Coventry lads at the moment. So if he continues in that vein, I think we've always been in unison that he's a top quality operator in the Championship. So they could have the best player in the division. And they've only lost one game. Yeah, they drew a few games early part, but lost at Preston. Away form hasn't been brilliantly fruitful in contrast to that at Portman Road, but it'll get better. So I'm with Clarkey, but I'm thoroughly enjoying watching Coventry. They've got real goal power. If Hadji Wright stays fit, even if he doesn't, Thomas Asante is in a really good place currently. I suppose the biggest issue would be not losing players, maybe people coming for Lampard. If they're flying in January and there's a few Premier League jobs going, or maybe overseas, you never know. They might try and tempt him away, but you'd like to think, not loyalty, but that he'd recognise that Coventry in the Premier League would be really exciting.
And wants that on his CV, doesn't he? Surely he'll want that promotion to the Premier League.
Yeah, and he's, you know, Lampard is a very wealthy individual. I would hazard a guess. And, you know, but he's clearly like a football nut, isn't he? And grew up around football, and he'll know the significance of Coventry's plight the last few years and the potential of Coventry to lead him back into the Premier League, because he would have started his career playing against Coventry in the top flight. So I'm sure he'll want to stick around. And yeah, they could add a few, couldn't they? Because I think their strength probably has been in the continuity of the second half of last season, not losing players and not disrupting the squad by making wholesale changes. So that's definitely a strength of theirs. So we'll wait and see. I think the next few games, pretty easy on the eye in terms of the opposition. So it might get better for Coventry before we both maybe feel that Ipswich are going to reel them in.
I think this one is going to see more agreement from you both. Finish bottom. I mean, it's Sheffield Wednesday, isn't it, Sam?
Afraid so. Yeah. All the worst fears kind of aligned the other day in that Coventry defeat, because they've been quite competitive in some of the games. Yeah. And again, I said probably early part of the season that I saw them having enough experience maybe in the squad, you know, that first 11 to be competitive. And it's actually been a few of the young players that have been drip-fed in that have impressed in the last few weeks. So that's a bonus in the bigger picture. But obviously the short term is incredibly worrying. And yeah, I mean, it's not a completely similar scenario, but Luton minus 30 points that season there, you start with a little bit of vigour and hope, and in the cold winter months when you're looking up and thinking, cool, we need to start putting wins together to give ourselves an opportunity of staying in the division. And this is talking before any kind of points deficit right now, which could be forthcoming. I just think that hope and that not so much motivation, but that belief can suffer within the dressing room. And I think we're probably going to see something akin to that right now after the heavy defeat against Coventry. So I'm not seeing any way out for them. Obviously, like, you could repeat what I just said about Coventry in terms of the plight of recent times and what a like brilliant club it is. One of my favourite places to play. So you could just hope that some better news is on the horizon, because it looks like it's going to be a desperately sorry season on and off the pitch.
Mm. Yeah, it's one of my favourite grounds to go to as well. Yeah, talking about old school grounds, I probably should have mentioned that, really. Sheffield Wednesday's fantastic. Yeah, I think they will finish bottom, but I'll tell you what, Blackburn worry me a bit. They're quite solid defensively, which is probably why they'll be competitive in a lot of games. But they can't score goals. They haven't got any strikers. No, there's no one there that I think is going to score regular goals. Todd Cantwell is their leading scorer and midfielder, isn't he? And
only scored once in one game all season.
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't have that stat to hand, but yeah, that speaks volumes, doesn't it? So yeah, I do worry a little bit for Blackburn Rovers moving forward. I think that this could be a season where their sort of, not absent ownership, but their sort of passive ownership comes back to bite them. They haven't got much championship experience. They haven't got a lot of star quality. And the most important thing is you need to score goals. And I don't know who's going to get them.
A lesser podcast host would accuse the owners of chickening out, but that's not me. Who's going to be the team then, Adrian, who comes from nowhere to make a late run at the playoffs? There's always one of them.
There is always one. I mean, from where they are now, okay, the boring answer is Southampton, because surely with the players that they've got, they will shoot up the league and Will Steele with his pedigree, providing he stays in the job, because he must be under a little bit of pressure, that surely he'll get it right. But I wouldn't write off Wrexham. I wouldn't. They've been much better than I thought they would be. They've brought in a lot more quality, haven't they? Like some sort of top end championship players, and you know that they're not going to give up on it. You know that if they're in mid table come January, where they, you know, they could reach the playoffs, you know that the owners will dip into their pockets and go big again. So yeah, I'm struggling for a surprise pick, but yeah, maybe Wrexham would be a little bit of a surprise to some, because, you know, they haven't started brilliantly, but they have got a lot of experience. They have got players that have been in the playoffs that have been promoted before, and I think that does count for quite a lot. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they mount a bit of a challenge.
I'll just roll on here, Matt, because you need to come to me first, otherwise this is just going to be a podcast of me agreeing with everything the Oracle Clarkey says or suggests this Wednesday morning. Wrexham for me. I think the results show you know, one defeat in seven, the addition of Higham and Sheaf and the return of Windass, I think, yeah, just gives that spine some championship nous. And I think Phil Parkinson's spoken about the improvement of the players. They need to get better at home, using the crowd, just improve get the consistency better there, because I think they win a lot of away games, which they've shown already. So yeah, and in comparatively, if you look at Birmingham and their start to the season, their struggle for goals, their struggle for creativity, I just feel that Wrexham have got more. I don't know. I just think potentially Wrexham have got a little bit more growth. Not to say that Birmingham are going to struggle. And just to make it interesting, I'm not suggesting this team is going to get anywhere near the playoffs, but looking at recent results and recent performances, especially the other day against Southampton, I would have Derby improving, and probably improving quite quickly. Adjumang, fit, scored, very competitive in every game since that crazy game against Coventry where they shared eight goals. So very similar kind of shape to last season, if you like, under John Eustace. And I think those 1-1s, 1-0 defeats will quickly start turning in their favour. And that was a pre-season prediction, so I wouldn't be surprised to see Derby rise the table, much to Matt's annoyance.
Yeah, I mean, disgust would be the word I'd pick rather than annoyance. Right, next category, you go first then, Sam, so you don't just follow Clarkey.
Yeah.
Next to change manager, I'm going to put a ban on Watford here, because as we record at 10:20 on Wednesday morning, I've just checked their X feed and there is nothing about them changing manager, as is widely being reported.
Mm. Well, I think Clarkey covered off Blackburn to a degree a few moments ago, so I'm sorry, because I've got history with this fella and I'm fond of him and his work, but all is not well at Norwich City, I would suggest. Is that my feeling that he should go, Liam Manning? Absolutely not. I think there's been a huge turnaround in players, and I think it needs time. But I think something we often discuss is the majority of the supporters see you in the home games, yet to win at Carrow Road, a little bit laboured in the performances there, couple of wins on the road, but you need to appease the fans that go and turn out every fortnight for the home games. So yeah, they've been very, very lackluster. Obviously a derby defeat we're talking on the back of as well. So I think right now I'd probably look at the questions marks over him and probably Valor and Ishmael as well, as well as Pozzolano at Watford. But I think Blackburn have just got this habit of finding a result from somewhere. And I think they were improved in the second half or the last game against Stoke. I think they created quite a lot. So I could see that turning again with quite a new team and a new squad. And Liam Manning and the Norwich supporters have got to hope that some of the signings that Ben Napper has brought through the door across the last 6 months, 12 months, come good and come good quickly.
You're not manning up, you're manning out, you're somebody else entirely.
Yeah, I've got three teams written down here as well as the one I've picked, and they were Watford, Norwich and Blackburn. So covered it off. But I'll tell you what, Chris Davis at Birmingham is on the edge. It sounds absolutely nuts.
Really, yeah?
Yeah. Because I know a few people that are connected to that club and...
What about the owner's antics at Wrexham amongst the away support the other week? Did you see that? The team are not playing well. We're not doing well. We need to give them more in the second half, guys. I think he's going to make himself manager before too long.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Chris Davis is under pressure big time because Birmingham think they're good enough to go up, and that's their target. Promotion is their target. This is not a season of stability in the second tier. They want to be in and around the top six all season, and at the moment they're not, but I don't think they should get rid of him. He's just smashed all sorts of records, and I think they're a really good side, and I think he's a smart coach. But I fear for him. I think that if results don't go Birmingham's way in the next two or three matches, wouldn't shock me at all if they made a change, which would be so harsh. But they've got their eye on the biggest prize.
All right, we'll have to wait and see then. That was fun. We're going to turn our attention from who's going to change manager next to who has changed manager next. as I say, we are waiting on Watford, Paolo Pozzolano, Javi Garcia news. Nothing going on there as we record. But yeah, just assume that it's happened because Watford, there have been two managerial departures in League One since last we spoke. Blackpool have sacked Steve Bruce after a year in charge. He guided them to a ninth place finish last season. Hasn't been able to build on that. Last weekend's home defeat by Wimbledon was a seventh in 11 league games. It left them second from bottom. Most of the Steves have gone with him. Assistant coach Steve Agnew and first team coach Stephen Clements, but Stephen Dobby and Steve Banks are an interim charge until a replacement is appointed, presumably named Steve. They go to Blackpool on Saturday. Sam, Steve Bruce, I just want him to go watch the England cricket team for a bit, couple of holidays in the Caribbean, cocktail on the beach, that kind of stuff. He's 64 years old, that'll do, won't it?
Who knows? And yeah, it's not my place to have a go. Someone wants to go out and graft, and yeah, it's his profession, isn't it? And it's been his life. So yeah, I credit him more than anything for still wanting to get out there. But yeah, I think difficult to make a case for him keeping his job here because, you know, let's rewind 6 weeks when we did the pre-season predictions, we would have had Blackpool right up there because of the amount of good signings, probably the budget. I would say it'd be, you know, top six budget, wouldn't it? No question, with the type of player they were able to attract, and to be sitting one off the bottom, you know, tells the whole story. So I don't think they can have too many complaints at all to be let go in the aftermath of a game against AFC Wimbledon, which was incredibly comfortable. I think the 2-0 win for the visitors, Blackpool looked like they barely laid a glove on a Don's goal. I mean, it looked like they were potentially turning a corner when they beat someone at home, and Ennis got a couple and then got sent off. They're his last goals, Niall Ennis, who amongst a number of kind of eye-catching players that they've been able to put together at Bloomfield Road. So I'll let you ask Clarkey who comes next. I've got my own ideas on what would be a tap-in at this moment in time. But yeah, hugely underachieving. And my last point, Huddersfield would have been the other team that we probably spoke and put together with Blackpool during the pre-season. And yeah, maybe the performances haven't been perfect and the results haven't been perfect, but you know, look at where they are in the table in contrast to Steve Bruce's side. That tells the story.
Some interesting names, Clark, in the runners and riders. Two favourites. Ian Everett is odds on. Richie Wellens is even money. And then you push out a little bit further for your Ian Holloways and your Charlie Adams. I mean, Adam feels like one who might be a natural fit to me. Any of those you fancy, or are you going a bit further down? I mean, Sean Deitch is on this list at 12-1, which feels a little bit optimistic to me. You got Damien Duff in there as well. Maybe a quick return for Matt Bloomfield.
Yeah, Bloomfield at Bloomfield Road. It'd be decent, wouldn't it?
It's like Sadler in charge of the Saddlers, yeah.
Exactly. Look, I think Ian Everett feels like the obvious pick
here. Inevitable, I mean, would you go as far to say?
Inevitable, yeah, I like that. Yeah, I mean, Richie Wellens is an interesting link. Yeah, he might be open to move back to the North. And Leighton Orient, it's a tougher challenge for them.
He's probably linked there, Blackpool, because he played there. So that's just a link that comes every time. But yeah, absolutely, geographically, you're right there.
Yeah, but I think Everett seems like a good fit. They need a strong manager. They've got a lot of experienced players, I think. And for that reason, I think an experienced manager would be good. They have had a lot of injuries. Innes has been out injured. Honeyman as well, big signing, has been out injured. And I looked at their fixture list, and I'm not saying that he should have kept his job because it wasn't very good and they were a bit passive and lost too many games. But 8 of their 11 so far against teams that are sat in the top half. They've not played anyone 18th or lower yet. And they've had no home games against anyone in the bottom half. So those home, not gimmies, those home games that you sort of really expect to win, to sort of tick off, and just haven't had any. And that's to be taken into account. So whoever gets the job has probably got an easier run of fixtures coming up. So yeah, if I was in charge, I'd go for Ian Everett. The emotional one or the sentimental one would be Charlie Adam, wouldn't it? What a great player he was for Blackpool. But I don't know if he's done enough as a manager to warrant being given the responsibility of steering them off the bottom. If they're up near the top, you feel like it's a little bit more of a, you know, open job for him. But this needs someone who really knows what they're doing. And I think Ian Everett is a very good manager.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that one. The other team who changed manager, Luton Town, sacked Matt Bloomfield with the club 11th in League One following Saturday's loss at Stevenage. He left Wickham in a promotion place last season to become the Luton boss in January. He was unable to save them from a second successive relegation, finished 22nd, went down on goal difference, began the new campaign with 3 wins in 4, but a downturn followed 4 losses from 7 since then. I just had a look at the next manager odds for this one, Clark. I put in LU because I'd looked it up yesterday. I wanted to see if it changed. You know what the first thing that comes up on my when Google like predicts what you're going to put when I put in LU? That's a good one for long-time listeners. Luke 09 saves dog. The first thing that comes up on my history there, obviously. How do you feel about this one, AJ? Do you think that both Bloomfield and Wickham and maybe regretting his departure because it hasn't worked out for either of them, has it?
No, it's been horrible for both teams, hasn't it? That decision has had a detrimental effect on two clubs and Matt Bloomfield's own career. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a disaster. I mean, you just got to look at the 11 that started the game against Stevenage, and it's unrecognisable from the team that were in the Championship and also the team that were in the Premier League. It's, you know, they look, that's a very average League One lineup that they put out the weekend at Stevenage with not that much experience. And I don't know what's happened. What's happened to the money? Like, they're in the Premier League. Like, what's happened to it? Because the players in the team at Luton, I don't know half the players that are in the team at Luton.
I don't know this, but I wonder if maybe they've allocated it to the cost of the new stadium, perhaps.
But all that money from the Premier League and the team that they're putting out is unrecognisable and so poor by comparison. I think he lost his head a bit, didn't he? Milena Kelly and Jordan Clark have been subs. Well, they were subs at Stevenage, so was Naki Wells, the Canberra. I mean, these players shouldn't be subs. It's for a team in League One, really. I know they might not be playing great, but yeah, I just think it's just spiralled a little bit. He never was able to fix the leaking the goals. And he used 6 different systems. There was a little bit of a flip-flopper going on. And that probably happens with inexperienced managers that haven't been through that bad bit. Because that was the thing at Wickham. He did have a bad spell at the start, got through it. But then it was largely success, wasn't it? So it was his first real experience of sustained pressure. And I think under that pressure, he did make a few strange decisions from the outside looking in. That's how I saw it anyway. Let's see what happens, see who they turn to. The favourite's interesting, isn't it?
Well, the favourite is, but I've got to get in the fact that Stefan Kuntz is 25-1, apparently. If you were a teenager like me during Euro 96, you'd have been very amused by his name. I'm not sure that the former Turkey manager and then Hamburg sporting director is going to drop down to League One. But anyway, so the favourite, Sam, and even money, is Jack Wilshere. Alex Lawless in temporary charge is also in the running. Luke Williams and Russell Martin have been mentioned as well. If Blackpool need an experienced head, are Luton looking for something different? Any of those names particularly take your interest?
Well, it'd be exciting to see Jack Wilshere, wouldn't it? Maybe a different time. It would be a good idea and really exciting. I don't know if coming in right now, when I think there's genuine concerns amongst the supporters that they could be in for a relegation fight again. I think that's the reality of where we are right now. And it's hard not to feel sorry and sympathy for some of the supporters and people at the club, but there's something badly wrong there at the moment. And I think if you got 10 of the most ardent Luton supporters in a room, they'd probably all give you a different ingredient as to what's going wrong. I don't think you can put all of it or most of it at Bloomfield's door. I think the recruitment, I think having players, not many, albeit, but players that remain at the club from relegation and then subsequent relegation, Yates, Wells, centre forwards coming in and not hitting the ground running, looking for the right formation and the formula. Obviously, that's more the coaching team and it does fall at Matt Bloomfield's door. But I just think there's a real lack of atmosphere there at the moment. Obviously, probably because the expectations risen that they just thought they were going to be amongst it once more this season as they did last year. And when it doesn't happen, there's just a apathy towards the team and the club at the moment. So this is a huge appointment to try and get a little bit of stability. I was there, I remember, opening night, and they didn't play well. Wimbledon were the better side, and they got a victory. And you think, right, the creativity needs to improve from here. The chemistry of the team needs to take shape. And I think we're still talking about not having that now. You know, even in their most recent victory over Doncaster, it was better, but they've subsequently lost heavily at Lincoln and lost at Stevenage. I mean, given that they were in the Premier League, you know, they're losing at Stevenage.
A really good side
at the moment, and, you know, very, very difficult to beat and play to their strengths incredibly well. But Luton were given the top teams in the Premier League ago, 18 months ago. That's why they're still searching for, I suppose, a manager to get them going, and Bluefield has not been able to do that. But he leaves, I'm sure, with credit still in the bank, I would suggest, and no doubt he'll get another League One, League Two job.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll keep an eye on that one too. Probably a good thing for Luton that their game this weekend has been postponed because of international call-ups against Huddersfield. We are going to have a look at a couple of the matches that are taking place this weekend next day. Let's kick off with Sam's last club, Exeter City, in their home game with Reading. Just a couple of points between the pair ahead of kickoff. Both too close to trouble for comfort. I wonder, Sam, if that 94th minute winner at Lincoln from Kevin McDonald kept Gary Caldwell in a job. Is that too strong? Lost five on the spin in all comps, failing to score in four prior to that.
I'd probably be surprised if they changed at this juncture just because of the way Exeter is run. And, you know, it could be quite costly to change manager at this stage of the season. And the reality is, again, sorry to harp on, but they definitely came up in our pre-season predictions of being, you know, relegation troubled certainties. So nothing's changed in that regard. Great win at Lincoln, albeit certainly if you look at the stats, it was a little bit of a smash and grab. Nice finish from Kevin McDonald, who I couldn't believe, with all respect, was still playing. I know he went there a few years ago and did quite well in the infancy, but I'd not heard his name for a while. So part of that brilliant Fulham trio with Johansson and Kearney a few years ago. So great to see him still playing and scoring. So that's a big win. And we're going to come on to Crewe later, but they had a big win over Notts County and backed it up at Harrogate the other night, the game I was at. And I see Exeter having to do something here. Otherwise, the speculation, well, certainly the unhappiness of the supporters will continue unless they can find a little bit of continuity in terms of their results. The most interesting stat I've pulled out before this one, they've scored first four times, Exeter, four victories, gone behind seven times, seven defeats, no draws this season. So I see two teams here that are defensively better teams than they are attacking teams. So I'm not envisaging a lot of goals, but it's certainly one that they'll fancy winning. And other than the Lincoln result, you know, their results, Exeter, their victories, sorry, have been over all sides that have been struggling, Blackpool, Wickham and Peterborough. So this is a game with renewed confidence that they can be confident of getting something out of. And I wouldn't be surprised if they win back to back. But it is a squad with a distinct lack of star quality in comparison to last season. A lot of changes. McGuinness, Jaden Wareham doing a decent job. But, you know, there's not those individuals that maybe Exeter have had of yesteryear. Myself not included.
Probably say the same for Reading. Couldn't you, Clarkie? I mean, only one defeat in seven, but they've only won one of those games. No particular star power, albeit Jack Marriott in decent form. Totally slipped under my radar that he had joined them from Wrexham. It's difficult, isn't it? My initial line on this was, are they just going to be pleased to have a quiet season without all the noise off the field? Now they've got a bit of stability, but that only goes so far when you're so close to the relegation zone, I guess.
No way. Yeah, no. Fans, they soon forget. And it's like, no, we want to be good. We want a good team. And at the moment, they haven't got a good team, Reading. It's a bit of a nothing season so far. It's been flat. They haven't really played with great spirit and fight. It's been a bit passive, like some nice football, knocking it around, but probably too many saves. Passes, not enough exciting moments. Marriott's got 4-4, hasn't he? So he's doing his bit, but yeah, just around the team, it's not working. You know, they're 19th. They've not been blown away by anyone, but they're also not exciting the fans, and I think that's a real problem for Noel Hunt. I know that the club are keen to re-engage with the supporters in the local area, get them back buying the tickets, coming into the stadium, and at the moment, they haven't got a team that's providing a level of entertainment or interest that's going to generate that excitement. So I think Noel Hunt is under pressure, unfortunately.
Awkward for a new owner to sack a club legend. Maybe that's helping him out a little bit.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, but they've got to be better. And they've got to start this game better. As Sam talked about scoring first. Well, they've only scored first in two games this season. They won both those games, Reading, but they've conceded first in 8 or 9. I can't remember if they've played 10 or 11. So first 15 minutes of both halves. So 0 to 15 minutes, 46 to 60, 0-7 this season. You know, so they're starting both halves terribly, which again probably doesn't reflect brilliantly on the sort of motivation within the group from the manager. So yeah, they need more creativity, need a bit more drive, they need a spark. And yeah, I'm kind of with Sam here. Looking at it, I'm thinking this is a narrow Exeter win or a draw at best for Reading, unless of course they find that spark.
Right, our next preview is brought to you by the letter W, as Wigan and Wickham wish for a win. We bigged up Wigan after their 3-0 win against Donny last month, Adrian. They haven't won three in the league since then. They've only won three league games all season. This is not how it was supposed to go under Ryan Lang.
Yeah, you've picked some sort of teams that are just a bit flat at the moment. Like, it's just not really happening for them. They're 14th. That win against Donny is their only one since the 16th of August. All their wins have come at home. So they're actually good at home. And they'll look at this game at home to Wickham, even though Wickham have got a new manager. But they'll look at this and think, right, we've won three, drawn one at home. Yeah, this is one we'll win. You're looking for positives. Who's doing the business for Wigan at the moment? And there's only really one player that stands out. That's the right wing back, Fraser Murray. They brought him from Scotland. I think he's got 5 overall, 4 in the league. He's by some distance their best creator. He's created almost double the number of chances the next closest teammate, to give you an example. So everything seems to be coming through him. I thought they were unlucky actually at Plymouth last time out. They drew 1-1. It was a pen, but brilliantly dispatched by Talage. He penenka'd it, but I didn't really see a foul. I think it was a lucky penalty. And and I think they played pretty well in the game. So Ryan Lowe's chipper, he's optimistic. I think he says, if we're at it, if we work hard, if we press properly, we're a good team. But too often this season, they haven't been aggressive enough. They haven't been that team with the energy that reflects the manager. Because I really like Ryan Lowe. I think he's good. And once he gets that spirit and camaraderie, it can be quite a powerful thing. So I think Wigan will get there. I think they will have an upturn. But at the moment, it's not really happening for them. So this is a big game. And yeah, I would expect them to beat Wigan, I've got to say, given how bang average they've been.
They've got a new manager, or newish, Sam Wickham, as we've said. Mike Duff, 1-1 loss, 1 drawn, 1 so far. That is before last night's game against Fulham in the Virtue Trophy, which they won 3-1. What did you make of that appointment? What's the ambition for Wickham this season? Are we already at a just stay up kind of thing?
Oh, no, I wouldn't imagine so. No, we've you know, the calibre of manager in terms of his track record. Since he's been a boss, taking Cheltenham up and obviously managing higher up the food chain, and with the backing at Wickham again, which would be, you know, top 10 budget, probably top 6 budget, the amount of players they've brought through the door in the last 12 months, they'll have aspirations to climb and quickly. The most interesting thing, I think, going into this game is that they beat them, Wickham that is, beat Wigan in the League Cup not so long ago, 2-0. And that was the game, after having a look at it for 180 minutes, 270 minutes or so, or whatever it was. Michael Duff went 3-5-2 for that game. And subsequently, that's been his shape. And we know that's his favoured way of playing. So he's had a little look at it. They've had a slightly inconsistent start under him. And now he's got his ducks in a row, if you like. And that would be coaching them day in, day out on, you know, how he likes to play. Always wants that two up front. Big onus, obviously, on balls in from the two wing backs, who at the moment, I think, are Harvey and Back. So it's whether they can have that attacking impetus, I suppose, when they're in possession. The standout player, or certainly someone they're talking about, is McNeely. At the moment, the centre forward. So I think he comes into this fixture with real hope that he can be someone to deliver a goal threat.
Lee Healy. Seen a lot of him, Donnell McNeely. He's good.
I saw you posted a goal of his.
Yeah. We've been watching him for Chelsea's under 18s and 21s for 3 or 4 years. A real kind of penalty box poacher, but he's actually a Forest player now, loan at Wickham from Forest. Sorry, Sam.
That's all right. No, so yeah, he's someone that's exciting the fans. I was going to say Lee, he's someone who continues to divide opinion. I think he's a nice footballer, Luke Lee. He's 4 assists, so he's making the opportunities for his teammates. And yeah, they'll be going there confident of a repeat of what they did in the League Cup. And yeah, we're going to worse defensively than where they were last year, which is not something I envisage saying, because I like the centre-halves, love the goalkeeper. But I suppose the remit for Ryan Lowe was just to make them more creative and score more goals, which unfortunately, that's not working either at the moment. So agree with Clarkey, they'll improve. But yeah, I make Wickham, you know, a good bet to go out there and get something this weekend.
A couple of League Two games to have a look at. As we said, Sam was on commentary duty for Harrogate against Crewe on Sky on Monday night. Talk to me about Crewe in general then, Sam, ahead of their visit of Bromley this weekend.
Well, yeah, I think there's been a bit of negativity towards Lee Bell. I've always said, you guys know, I love listening to Dean Ashton talk, and he was in the studio for Sky the other day, and I think Dean's brilliant. And he, I think, was in the academy with Lee Bell. And he kind of said, and it wasn't in a negative terms, but he said Lee's kind of, in terms of the style of the side, the least Crewe manager that there's been in recent history. Mm. You know, it's all about, he was a very hardworking player, Dean said, and there's real energy in his team. And, you know, they're not against being direct at times. So it's not a, and it has been in my memory, you know, even going back to Dean Ashton and Rob Hulse and Kenny Lunsday, you know, they're a possession side and very, very different to a lot of the teams in League One and League Two. And that's not necessarily been evident under Lee Bell's tenure. However, the other day, Harrogate are really good in their shape without the ball. And it meant that, having got their nose in front, Crewe did have a lot of the ball. And I thought, this could be a long night for them again, because they lost at Barrow. They lost at Gillingham, two teams who want to sit in. And I thought, you know, they're not creating much, Crewe, last few weeks, not scoring much. This could be a really long night for them. But The goal, which came from a set piece, just really turned their fortunes around. Hutchinson, the left back, looks like a good player. Been playing out in Ireland. He was a real attacking threat for them down the left. It just changed their fortunes, and you could see the confidence levels lift, especially in the younger players. Ajus, one of the wide players. Holacek, O'Reilly on loan from Aston Villa. You know, a number of either lads that have been schooled through the academy at Crewe or ones they've got on loan. I could just see that kind of the shackles were off. And from that moment, they were the better side at Harrogate. Lancaster came on, I think it was half-time or just into the second half. Excellent. We know how good he is technically. Been a good player out of Ipswich. Played, you know, very well for Cambridge over a number of years. He's quality. He added something. O'Reilly, I kind of liked the look of. And all of a sudden, they look like a good side. Whether they're going to have enough goal power maybe to get themselves in the reckoning would be my one question. But on evidence the other night, a decent side, confidence is back, back-to-back wins now, and we'll go into the game against Bromley. Certainly favourites to win that one. But yeah, I don't probably see a team that's in the mould of a automatic promotion team, but top half certainly, and one that could push maybe for promotion. Playoffs.
Okay, good shout. As for Bromley, Clarkey, I'm sure you're about to make this comparison as well. They are the David Hockney of League Two in that both love drawing. 9 of 17 in all comps have finished all square so far. That's not going to get you up the table very quickly.
Yeah, it was just on the tip of my tongue, that. Yeah, I'm a big David Hockney fan.
Definitely didn't just Google British artists who draw when I was writing that.
I think Bromley would be really disappointed to be in 13. I think they're better than that. My mate, Mark O'Hare, who's got all the spreadsheets, he has Bromley down as third for expected points. He thinks they should be third based on the data. You know, they've only lost twice this season. They threw it away against Tranmere at the weekend, 3-1 up, and then somehow conspired to draw 3-3. They've had a problem at defending set pieces. So that was an issue in the game. They're brilliant at scoring them, though. 11 of them this season, the most in the division. They've actually had 18 more attempts on goal from set pieces than the second best set piece team, which is Cambridge United. So they are far and away the most dangerous team from corners and wide free kicks. So that will always give them a chance. But they need a win, don't they? 5 without a win, conceded 10 in those games. So defensively, they've lost their mojo, but they've got goals in them. We know that with Kabamba, who's been in pretty lethal form, actually. Got a really good conversion rate, Kabamba, and Cheek. We know he'll always score goals. Mitch Pinnock kind of looks a bit revived at Bromley. I mean, his numbers are ridiculous. He's got 4 assists. He's created 7 big chances. Next in line at Bromley's 2. He's created 35 chances overall, which is the most in the division, by 12. So, you know, flying down the left, putting in lots of crosses. Obviously, he takes a lot of set pieces as well. That accounts for a lot. But yeah, he's a big player for them. So yeah, look, they're tough. They're direct. They're robust. They've got good strikers. But at the moment, they're not defending well enough. And that's a problem for them, isn't it? And interesting, the late J. Lloyd Samuel, his son. It's good to see him getting a look. And he's 19. He's on loan from Man City. And he's broken into the team at right back. So keep an eye on him. Lakyle Samuel is England Youth International. And, you know, Man City player, England Youth International, he's gone on loan to Bromley. You know, that's how far Bromley have come on as a club. So yeah, good luck to them. I think Bromley are hard to play against, and they're a pretty very well drilled team that won't lose many matches this season. It's just, yeah, are they strong enough defensively? We'll see. This will test them.
It'll be a closely contested game, that one. Right, could be worse, listener. You could be a Shrewsbury fan. Sorry if you're a Shrewsbury fan. The Shrews have been tamed consistently this season. They go into their weekend matchup with Cambridge, second from bottom in League Two. They've only won 1 in 8 in the league following relegation last season. I sort of wondered, and sackings and potential sackings, Sam, have been the theme of this show, if this was a must-win game for Michael Appleton. But It's one of those jobs where you got the caveat of everything's a bit up in the air, right? It broke last week. Second takeover bid has collapsed. It's a tough one for anybody to sink their teeth into at this stage.
Maybe more performance. Must need a performance just to give a little bit of hope. I'm with you, though. Yeah, spare a thought when you're getting ready to go to a game on Saturday for the Shrewsbury fans that have seen two home goals so far this season, the fewest in the division. And results to go with that as well. Seven goals, only Cheltenham scored fewer. Only Cheltenham and Newport conceded more than their 20. And
really good use of the word fewer instead of less here, Sam. Very, very good grammar.
Thank you. Thank you. And when you when you look at the numbers, they're making very few chances and they're not taking the ones that they're making. 23rd for big chances, which is, I think, 11 they've had on the opposition goal. So they're not making anything basically in terms of their creativity. They got Marquis and Anike to name but two of very experienced front men. But yeah, this is a poor team. And I think on reflection, when he took the job, Michael Appleton, after that short tenure from Gareth Ainsworth, if memory serves, clutching around my brain cells there. But yeah, it felt like he was walking into a very, very difficult job. That's how it felt at the time. And that's how it's playing out. And sometimes I know I'd imagine, you know, it's so tempting to get back into the Football League and take on a managerial role. We know how addicted they are to it. But you just think that, you know, maybe had he not taken this one, something where he stood a better chance of success may have appeared. But Shrewsbury have had, I wouldn't say golden periods, but they've had really successful spells in the last 5-10 years. And the fans will expect better than they're getting served up at the moment. They've always been hard to score against. They've always been competitive defensively. They've never had a glut of goals in their armoury. So I think it's going to be a struggle. Yeah, and I'm absolutely with you. I think when you, with respect, have a home game against Cambridge United, despite the distance currently in the league table, the fans will expect a competitive performance and at least probably a point. Otherwise, yeah, the noise will only get louder, unfortunately.
Yeah, Appleton's actually on the list, albeit the outsiders, for both those Luton and Blackpool jobs that we spoke about earlier. As for Cambridge, Clarkie, one of the clubs of your heart, they've adjusted to life back in League Two much better than Shrewsbury. They go into this one only outside of the playoffs on goal difference.
Yeah, they're flying. Yeah, finally I get to speak about a team that's in good form, four unbeaten. For my money, Neil Harris has organised them really, really well. They aren't pretty. Like, they do boom it. Like, just look at the stat. They beat Crawley at the weekend. They had 28% of the ball. Over a third of their passes were classified as long. They only made 103 accurate passes. Yeah, they scored three goals. So they effectively scored a goal every 34 successful passes, which I think is pretty efficient, don't you, Matt? I mean, that's not bad going. So what I think Cambridge are is maybe the best defensive team in the league. They aren't giving up many chances at all. They've faced a few shots by quite a long way. Opponents aren't getting into their box. So opponents have had 151 touches in Cambridge's box this season, which is 40 less than the second best team in that department. So again, you know, easily the best, and they're keeping teams at arm's length. And the numbers do back that up. They've let in one goal or fewer than one goals in 10 of their 11 games. So only once have they conceded twice. I mean, that was three times against Swindon. So they're really, really good defensive team, Cambridge, and they know what they're doing. That they feel like a team on the rise. They've also got a lot of quite experienced players in the EFL that have played in good teams before. So I quietly fancy Cambridge to maybe launch a playoff bid here, and I think they can go at Shrewsbury and win.
Yeah, experienced manager, knows what he's doing. Could be in for a good season, could Cambridge. Okay, we're nearing the end of the show. We're going to rattle through our predictions and tweet of the week before we leave you, though. Last week, Matt and Adrian, 2 points. Sam, just the 1 point. So we continue to reel the runaway leader in. What's that done to the scores then, Adrian?
Yeah, so I'm on 25. You two are now level on 13 apiece.
Wow. Okay. Sam, you better go first then. Northampton, Rotherham.
Well, I've taken a little bit of time this week after a bit of stick that was flying my way.
A bit of analysis.
Less time on the golf course, I think, for me. More time number crunching. Well, this is going to be low scoring. I think you two have gathered that from my sentiment already. I'm quite tempted. Oh, I'm going first. How exciting. They've won the last four at home, Northampton, without conceding. But they're not going to do it again. Nil. Effing nil.
Wow, what a way to kick off. I'll go for a 1-0 home win, Adrian.
Yeah, I think I could see that was what you'd go for. I'm gonna go with a draw, but we'll call it one apiece.
All right, well, you can go first on Burton versus Bolton.
Yeah, look, I've gone a bit all in on Bolton. 2 or 3 weeks ago, I said that they will. I think I said they'd get top two, and they remain inconsistent. But I remain confident that they will get it right. Burton away is not the toughest fixture. Burton 1, Bolton 3.
Okay, 2-goal margin of victory. Sam, going for an away win here too?
Come on, let's just go all in. They've turned the corner, haven't they, Burton? They beat Cardiff the other day, and Bolton love a 1-1. There you go, there's some research. And they're 4 in a row or 5 in a row. 1-1 at Terry.
Okay, I'm going to go for 0-2. To Bolton, and then I get to go first on Crawley Walsall. Crikey, I don't really know what this is going to be, but I'm going to say that Walsall will win this by 2-1. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, that's what I had. They have only beaten Cheltenham at home, Crawley, I believe, and Walsall are flying. Got to go with the Saddlers. 1-3.
Clean sweep for the away W here, Adrian.
Yeah, all day long. I feel Scott Lindsay might be on borrowed time. Crawley 0, Walsall 2.
Okay. All right. Those are locked in. While we're talking about predictions, remember our partners, Quinbet, have boosted the acca that the chaps have picked this week. It is for Stockport to beat Blackpool, Gillingham to beat Cheltenham, and over 2.5 goals in Chesterfield against Salford. You can get 4-1 on that if you go to Quinbet. Bet now. Just click the link in the show notes or find the offer on our socials. Remember, our partners Quinbet have an offer for you where you get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. You can find us on X at EFL What There, and that is where we find this week's tweet of the week. It comes from Queen's Park Rangers Paul Smythe, who says, "Brilliant performance, great reaction in the second half from the boys, !! See you after the break, !! White heart emoji, blue heart emoji, and then four pictures of Paul in action. I picked this one, Sam, partly because you support QPR and I thought you'd enjoy it, but also because the post below, so this is 5th of October, 30th of August, is not quite a copy and paste, but he said, "Brilliant response, fantastic support, great way to head into the international break," and four pictures of him playing. He always goes for the three or four pictures of him playing. It's fairly routine stuff. I just wonder if he's doing this himself or if he's AI'd it or asked his agent or his missus to do it for him.
First things first, interesting to hear that you're a Smythe punter over Smith.
I mean, if it's Smith, then fair enough. But he spells it S-M-Y-T-H.
I think a Smythe is with a Y, surely. That's how
I always... Who knows? It's not a surname I'm familiar with. It's been around long enough. Nobody seems to know, which we probably should do, given it's our job. For someone who strikes me as particularly charismatic and can do backflip somersault during his celebrations, it's very mundane, isn't it? I do like the picture, the fourth picture. The first two are unnecessary. We know what Paul Smythe looks like in full flight. We don't need to see that. But
essentially the same picture as well. It's a bit sloppy.
Yeah. The lovely cushioned header arcing into the corner of the net at Ashton Gate is a beauty. So I've no problem with that, but I need a little bit better in print. But on the Super Hoops march, 4 wins and 2 draws from the last 6. But yeah, I would expect better from someone who strikes me as a very, very good character. Smudger. By the way, sorry, have you seen the goal? just quickly before I throw you two under the bus like I did on a previous podcast?
I've seen it, but I don't know. Yeah, what is it
Bristol City
it?
Defender goes to ground and gets a slight shove in the back. I just wondered if you thought it was a foul or not, because I was surprised it was given. It was allowed.
One of those that maybe would have been a foul in the Premier League, but not in the EFL, kind of in that category. I like in the replies, Clarky, the sort of innocence of two back-to-back replies of people taking a picture of different Smythe roads around the country and saying, ha, they named this road after you. What I'm less keen on is Seaside Ranger being a bit busy. Excellent result, Paul. Both you and Harvey were the game changers. Next up, Millwall, the way to beat them is to attack their fullbacks and get low crosses in. They have 6-foot-plus defenders, so lumping the ball in isn't going to work. Get round the back and cut back. You think he's going to feed that back to the manager and say, hey, Seaside Rangers got the way to beat Millwall, Gaffer?
Sounds like a new version of World in Motion, no?
Yeah. Put the tactics board away, Seasider. Come on, mate. just let the guy enjoy his moment. He's just tweeted, you know, I'll see you after the break. He's having a break. All right. Just let
In my mind's eye, if I'm seeing Smythe, he's getting to the byline and cutting things back. He's not whipping it in. He's going the low route. Doesn't need to be told.
See you after the break is sort of, he's basically down in tools. He's giving himself an out there, isn't he? He's not messaging anyone. He's not tweeting for a couple of weeks, is he? Enjoyed it to a degree, but bit boring.
Enjoyed it to a degree. It's very passive aggressive. I enjoy that very much. Right, that is where we are going to leave things for today. Thanks to Sam and Adrian for their company. Thanks to Sam's boy for being perfectly behaved during the record as well. And to you for listening mostly. We're back with another show next week. For now, though, from all of us, it's goodbye.